name is Bob, and I'm subbing for Ann today on Digging in the Dirt. And my guest is Becky Graham from Harvest Moon Design. And we're going to be talking about outdoor living spaces. So, Becky, I wanted to ask you to describe a little bit your business. And then we're going to go into the concept of outdoor living space. And then Becky's pretty excited because she gets to talk about her new yard that she's designing. So tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm a landscape designer. I also do garden coaching. And if you're not familiar with that, that's for folks that want to do their own gardening, but maybe they just need some help, maybe even identifying plants in their garden or insects or disease. We could be working side by side seasonally to figure out their garden, especially if they're new to the area. Garden coaching would be a really good way to get familiar with our environment here and the plants that thrive and even plants that can survive deer, which we have quite a bit of.
We do.
And I do a lot of custom container design, which is a lot of fun. I do that for businesses and residential.
So these like huge containers?
From small to large. They're kind of like a living floral display. I really like to put it as a really artistic way.
I remember the container display in front of Bach and Rock in downtown Astoria. It had all kinds of containers built up. You didn't do that one?
No, I didn't. He did that himself, and he seems very enthusiastic about his plants and pets.
So what are some of the businesses that you've done container designs for that we might know?
The Hotel Elliott, currently. The Astoria Coffee House, the containers, the trees out front. The original Urban Cafe, but he's since redone them himself and has done a fantastic job. Paul has. Victorian Lace, and I think that's it for Astoria, basically.
Cool. Well, I think it's one of the things when you're walking down the street that enhances the view. What I wanted to say was that when I first came here, I came here from Seattle, and I needed a little bit of help on the garden stuff, and it rains here about twice as much as it does in Seattle.
Does it really?
And it seems this year it rained about twice as much as it normally does typically, and certain things that even grew in Seattle, which is pretty rainy, but had a pretty dry summer, won't grow here. So what are some of the tips that you give to people about plants that maybe they move from Portland or somewhere inland that grow here or grow here that don't grow other places or don't grow here that,
that
do grow in other places?
Yeah, one thing is the difference between Portland and Astoria is that we've actually gained a zone. So we can grow plants that are a little more tender than the plants that they can grow in Portland. Mm-hmm. Temperatures don't get as cold for as long. But we have some crazy winds, and we also have a lot of rain in our springs when they're really, really wet. The plants have gone all winter long, and then spring also sometimes just drown. So really, really good drainage, and plants that are just suited for this area. And then when we get into August and September, we can actually have very little rain, so we have to remember that even though it rains here a lot, we need to water our plants in the summer.
Yeah, I started, I'm taking care of these bicentennial heritage trees that were planted last year, and basically the job is to keep them watered. And we were lucky last year when they were planted in the spring that it rained up until July, and this year the spring has been kind to those trees, and so they're doing okay. But once we got into the summer months, we had to water those trees.
Yeah, that's a really good topic, actually. Something I like to tell people is when you have a new planting is you need to think of them as a brand new baby, and all their needs need to be met by you, at least for the full year. until they mature on their own. But their water needs, their fertilization. So basically, you need to baby those plants for the first year until they get established. And even especially through the drier months of the summer, the first year.
Yeah, and we were planting trees that weren't these giant conifers that can survive in our 100-mile-an-hour winds and very wet weather and stuff. These were kind of tender crab apple.
It's actually good sometimes when the leaves drop, because then they're less of a sail in the wind.
Right. Well, thank you, Kathleen. Mm-hmm. We've got a great question for you. So business landscapes need to look good all year round.
Mm-hmm.
The businesses here need everything they can get business in the winter. So what plants do well, and how do you design for a space that works for 12 months instead of, just kind of working in the summer and putting it to sleep in the winter?
Well, it's a great question, because I really think it's important to have four-season plants. So we have plenty of plants that actually look really great in the winter, and some of those plants are natives, evergreen huckleberries,
yes.
Sward ferns, some of our conifers, or even plants that have attractive bark. Native vine maples have a really nice bark. Grasses, there's evergreen grasses, there's perennials that actually bloom in the winter, hellebores, euphorbias. So there's just lots and lots of plants for every season.
That's great. It sounds like a miniature, condensed, gigantic garden.
Yes.
In a pot.
Yeah. There's no reason that your garden shouldn't shine in the winter. In fact, if it's dull in the winter, it's really not a garden. You really should have it year-round. Because what we're going to do is we're going to look out the window all winter long, so it'd be nice to look at something pleasant.
So tell us a little bit about this outdoor living space thing that you do.
Well, it's something that just comes natural to me. I love spending time outdoors, so anything that I can do to create a space when we do have good weather that just encourages you to spend more time outdoors. A patio space that can be a sanctuary. You can have a nice little water feature, a place to relax. Could be a place to cook and entertain, a meditative place. Maybe it's just a spot that you have your hammock where you can go out and read a book, but there's just so many things that you can do. And vegetable gardening. So
is this outdoor living space, like, you can go there in the winter? You have some way of protecting it, or
you do that? I would highly recommend, if you're an outdoor person, to have a covered space outdoors so you can enjoy being outside in the winter, especially when we have really long winters like we do, and you get a little cabin fever like I do. You need to be able to get outside and feel the fresh air and at least enjoy some time outdoors, even if it's raining.
Excellent. So it says here that a listener is looking for suggestions on medium-sized trees. They don't want to cut them down in 10 years, like people cut down alders here. 10 years from now, and maybe fruit trees. So can you recommend any kind of, like, a tree that's not going to get huge that maybe will produce some food for people?
Well, I'm trying fig trees this year.
Fig trees.
And we'll see how they do. They're deciduous. They really don't seem to be bothered at all by insects or diseases. So if we have a really, really cold snap, they can die back, but they'll come back.
I remember I got a fig seedling in Portland, and I asked them, I said, I'm on the coast. I said, will they grow here? And the guy said, yeah.
Yeah.
So fig trees, hey, we could start a new business. We'll have Astoria figs.
Yeah. Well, and there's lots of dwarf varieties of Asian pears, of apples, but you really want to check to make sure that they are disease resistant. In other words, if you get a plant that's prone to fungal diseases, in our area, then you're going to just be constantly fighting problems. So really looking to make sure that it's a plant that's going to thrive and be disease resistant.
Well, I can recommend to the listener, by my own experience, Liberty and Chehalis apple trees. You can get dwarf varieties here, and they seem to grow regardless of weather. They are just blooming now. They seem to know exactly when to bloom. Mm-hmm. They come out and bloom exactly when the sun comes out for at least a week, so the bees pollinate, and the apples are delicious.
This is Kathleen. I'm kind of behind the controls
and
here.
We're thanking Kathleen, who knows the ropes of this show. So,
but I'd like to go back, and you were talking about outdoor spaces that are usable 12 months per year, and then you were recommending a permanent structure to use in the off season, even when it's cold. And I've seen in people's yards, you know, the tents, the gazebo type things, but mm-hmm. you can't really use those. So do you have recommendations on what kind of structures really work where that actually get used? Do you have any feedback from your own clients?
Well, if you can create a covered porch, that would really be ideal, because you step straight out from a dry area to another dry area. If you have a gazebo in part of your yard that's covered and it's large enough, you still have to go running through the rain to get to it, which is, you know, it's fine. Most of us are used to the rain around here to a certain degree. I don't think any of us are going to melt. But, you know, even in Japanese gardens, they create little structures called moon viewing structures. So it doesn't have to be huge. It's just a small little space. It's roofed and it has a bench in there. And maybe you're not just looking at the moon, but you have a nice view of a wildlife little area. Maybe you're attracting birds to your garden so you can sit and watch a special area and watch the birds. So lots of ways to, if you want it, we can figure it out.
I think it's really important in this area. People start going stark crazy mad in the winter. And yes. I think if they maybe had some of these things to go out to right from their house, they would be okay.
You know, I agree.
It's really beautiful here in the winter if you can get to look at it.
Yes. And the temperatures are usually mild, so it's just that fear of getting soaking wet.
Well, going along with that, your specialty is container design. Mm-hmm. So at our house, we have a front porch that serves to be that structure now that you mm-hmm. mentioned, that it's not a special outdoor structure. And we do spend time in there, even in the winter. We have a little rocking swing, mm-hmm. but we don't have any plants on the porch. And part of the reason is that, well, there's the watering issue, and you just don't think about that in the wintertime. So what is an ideal size for a container plant that might work for your front porch, and how do you remind yourself to keep it watered?
Well, the larger the container, the easier it is to keep watered. The smaller, you're just going to have to watch it almost daily if it gets hot. And even in the winter, people forget to water plants underneath the eaves or under their porches, so just keep that in mind. But probably at least a 14-inch width or larger would be a good size, something manageable so that you can lift it onto your porch
cleaning.
If you need to move it.
Yeah.
But make sure it still gets some light under there and keep it watered. But lots of plants do really well in that. And it's just going to make that space feel more homey instead of being all man-made. If you get some nature in there, it just really changes the whole atmosphere. So, and a nice little water feature would be nice. Just a tabletop bowl, just with a little trickle out there. It's a little bit different from the rain. But it's just a nice, relaxing.
I love those things with bamboo. They have bamboo, and it kind of knocks the bamboo thing down and courses over rocks.
In Japanese gardens.
Yeah, it just instantly relaxes
it's
you.
It's peaceful.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bob again, sitting in for Ann Goldin, and this is Digging Your Dirt here on Coast Community Radio. My guest is Becky Graham of Harvest Moon Design, and she has already told us about some of the things she does. She does container design and outdoor living spaces, and now she's going to get to talk about her new yard. She's very excited about this. So in talking about your yard, why don't you tell us, you know, kind of some of the things that are themes in the work you do?
I'm really excited to have this space. I've been wanting, dreaming of an acre of land at least my whole life. So a year ago, my partner and I've got an acre of land, and the front yard is huge, and it was all grass. And we are now taking up that grass and creating a 3,000 square foot front yard food. We're really trying to get sustainability out there. We've reduced all our utility bills, and we're start growing a bunch of our own food. But it's going to be a large fenced area, but on the outside is going to be beds with plants that the deer won't be tempted to eat, such as artichokes and some of the herbs. Have fig trees out there, some dwarf pear trees, lots and lots and lots of blueberries and huckleberries. And then on the inside, it's going to be raised beds for vegetables, also some cane berries. And in addition, a kitchen, an outdoor kitchen, so it'll be a covered but open area with a large counter space that you could actually, with a sink, that you can clean your vegetables cool. straight from the garden, put them straight on the grill, or possibly even do the canning outdoors. Generally, canning is done in August at the hottest time of the year, so trying to figure out how to get electricity out there so we could possibly even do some canning right there in the garden. So there'll be a couple of patio spaces. It'll be actually a destination, not just a vegetable garden, but a place to hang out, entertain, water features. And with all that, I'm anticipating this project is probably going to take us 2 years. We just got started, but it's a pretty big one. And we're also collecting used windows, glass windows and doors, and we're going to repurpose them and make a small greenhouse so that we can start plants right in that greenhouse and then just directly take them right into the garden. So trying to think of every way that I could use that space and design it right in it so that it's just a really high-functioning place that's going to be a really enjoyable place to be. My neighbors are all excited. They're anticipating that I'm sharing my vegetables with them, and I brought that up. I'll probably have a basket out front with vegetables that they can come by and help themselves. And
oh, they're going to love that.
Yeah.
When you created this idea in your head, did you sit down with paper and pencil on the kitchen table, or did you involve the neighbors? Did you walk the property and have it speak to you? How did you even think of this?
Well, it does start a little bit on paper. Chris Salisbury is my partner, soon to be my husband this fall. He's a landscape contractor, and we're both just two peas in a pod. So we talk about gardening night and day. So some of ours is just in conversation, and our designs start out one way, but then they evolve. They sort of grow a life of their own. And so this kitchen garden has sort of evolved in that way.
Do you have any plans to like open a CSA just from your backyard?
Well, I'm not sure if I could do that with, you know, it being a home and not a business zone-wise. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure where it's going to go. I'm anticipating that it's actually going to take us on an adventure. More than just picking vegetables out of our garden.
So, thanks for talking about it. It gives me all kinds of ideas. I wanted to ask two questions, mm-hmm. and then we're probably going to have to go. But One question is about this deer. I know a lot of people call in and want to know what they can plant that is either good food or looks nice and that the deer won't want, because even in my yard, which is kind of out of the way, deer manage to get everywhere. And unless you have a dog nearby, they're going to eat something in the garden. I usually let them eat something because they need food too. But is there, you mentioned, what, fig trees and huckleberries and things. So there are some things that deer don't like.
Well, I'm going to see how they do with the fig trees. Some trees, you actually just want them to be tall enough to start so that they can only maybe reach the bottom leaves. Mm-hmm. But a lot of foods that they don't like are really strongly flavored herbs, mm-hmm. Plants that are just very, very tough or spiny. Or just have very little appeal to them. Now, some deer will not go by the rules, and they have a taste for something that you've known that deer, as a rule, just don't eat. So some deer just have a taste of their own. And
you just have to find that deer.
You have to find.
Know who they are and
there's
just
lists.
Say, you can't come in here.
Well, especially when they're hungry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and so the other question is that we wanted you to talk about some of the other projects that you're working on. I know that you probably want to work on your yard all the time, but could you tell us about some of the other projects that you're working on right now?
Well, I'm currently helping Clatsop Care Center. They want to get a healing garden for their residents, and they asked me if I'd help them out. I'm doing a pro bono design, and we've already drew up a design, and it's in the very beginning stages, but I'm really excited about it because I truly believe in connecting with nature and its restorative, peaceful healing properties for me. So I can imagine if I was stuck indoors all day how important that space would be. So I'm really excited about that for them. I know they're going to be looking for volunteers and even donations to help them with this project. But it's going to be a real worthwhile project, and I'm excited.
Where is it going to be? I can't picture.
In the back.
In the
they
back,
have a small patio, and we're expanding it. We're actually taking some of the asphalt out, and we're going to enclose it and have raised beds in there, possibly some containers, places where the residents and their family members or even staff can just sit and enjoy the garden or work in the garden.
And have you ever worked with schools?
A long time ago, I was a wildlife steward, and I worked with an elementary school to put in a garden, but that was a lot of fun too.
So you have two big projects going on, first with Clatsop Care Center, mm-hmm. and in your own 3,000 square foot, I think you said, yard. Now both spaces.
You see Kathleen's face when she says that.
It's a lot of work for two people.
Yeah.
So one place you're taking out asphalt, the other place you're taking out grass, and
yes.
I think most of us can really identify with having to take out grass
yes.
if we want to put in a food garden. And have you started that process?
Yes.
And What tips can you give the rest of us for doing that very difficult chore?
Taking out the lawn?
Yes.
Well, it's hard work. You can rent a machine that it takes off the sod, and I think it would take somebody kind of strong to do that. I saw my partner doing it, and it really bounced him around. But it was a lot easier than taking the shovel and scraping that. But either way, it's hard work. It's a labor of love. And
do you know what that machine is called if people want to go to a rental shop and ask for it?
I think it's called a sod remover.
Okay.
Yeah, sod cutter.
I didn't even know such a thing existed.
Oh, yeah.
They're
like jackhammers. It's kind of, you almost ride them. I know in my yard what I did, I got lucky. It was sad, but a neighbor cut down this gigantic spruce tree. And when the people were grinding it up, I said, you don't really need all those chips, right? And I took a boatload of chips, much to my wife's chagrin, mm-hmm. and put it over the backyard. I didn't even really take the grass out. I just covered it in about 6 inches of wood chips. And there's no lawn. And the chips are still decomposing. And so what I've said is that I'm taking that tree and using it as food to create a new whole bunch of trees, actually, in my backyard. So I can vouch for covering your lawn and waiting.
That's fantastic idea, too. I've heard of folks that put cardboard down,
newspaper.
And then probably, I don't know what they put on top of it, maybe more...
newspaper and...
And
soil or...
To weight it down so the wind doesn't blow it
all natural way to kill your grass.
So if you have enough forethought and think, I want to do this next year, then you can put your cover down this year and do that waiting process.
And the good part is that you keep all of the biomaterial and it breaks down.
Yeah.
So if you scrape it off, then you basically have some all of that stuff that was on top is lost to you, unless you put it back.
We actually are creating beds with that. We're taking a propane blowtorch and burning the grass. So it takes a couple times of burning it because it'll try to come back. Basically, you're keeping it from getting any nutrients, and if you keep doing that, it's going to die. So whether you're smothering it or, just hitting it with a blowtorch, but it's wonderful material for the compost also.
Okay, well, we only have, a couple minutes left, and I wanted to make sure that people got your name, business name, and phone number and email, so I have it written down, but I'm going to let you do it.
Okay. Well, my company's Harvest Moon Design. My phone number is 503-791-7664. And you can email me at hrvstmndsn@msn.com. Basically, it's Harvest Moon Design without the vowels. But email me with any question. And I'd be glad to help.
And you can also, as always, you can also call the station here, 503-325-0100, and ask us for this information. We always write it down, and we'll be happy to get you in touch with Becky. So my guest has been Becky Graham of Harvest Moon Design, and we've been talking about outdoor living spaces and containers and how to make the space around your house and around your business something that you can commune with nature with for all year round. Thanks, Becky.
Thanks for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
And my name is Bob, and Ann will be back next week with To Your Health. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.